So you buy in the wouldn't. You buy in there should have been the N and the T at the end of the wood. Are you buying that? Because I'm not buying it at all. And if you looked at his body language during the hostage video that we saw today, again, not buying it whatsoever. And look, I'm sure there'll be somebody that's duped into it. I'm sure someone will go, see, he just misspoke. Yeah, if you watched the video, did you see the body language? Was that someone who was going to be making a charge against the Russian leader? No, that was somebody who was very, very submissive. And you got to wonder what the 2 hours and 15 minutes in closed door, what that brought us and what we gave in on there. Anyway, great new podcast out. Highly suggest everyone go out right now where you get your podcast and get Gaslit Nation. You know, we've been talking about this on the program since Inauguration Day. It has been a long journey, and fortunately, our good friends Andrea Chalupa and Sarah Kenzior have finally put this out, and not any time that, the perfect time, if you will. That's why I've asked Sarah Kenzior to come talk with us, share some thoughts on today's he said scenario, also a bit about the great podcast. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So let's get to the he said, do you buy the wouldn't? Are we buying any of this?
No, I mean, and it's formulaic. This is the same thing he did after Charlottesville. It's the same thing he did after the Access Hollywood video. You know, occasionally there come these moments where the punditry and the politicians kind of wake up, you know, realize that there is a traitor in office, that there is a monstrous figure in office, that he endangers the entire world. And you get about, you know, 24 hours of clarity, which often seems to astound Trump, because it's so rare that people stand up to him. That happened after the Helsinki summit / private meeting. And I think that the backlash was maybe a little too much. So he did what he always did, which is just lie, was just, you know, openly, audaciously lie about things that we saw directly and try to backtrack on it. And unfortunately, I do think that people will ultimately struggle to give him the benefit of the doubt. Some of those people are complicit, and some of them just can't process the horror that is being inflicted upon us and want badly to think that this is not actually happening.
That's a good point. And, you know, he couldn't leave, you know, much like Charlottesville, you know, you good people on the other side. He couldn't leave the others out here either. He said, I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia's meddling in the 2016 election took place. Could be other people also. It could be someone else. Could be the Canadians.
He can't help himself. I mean, even when he's in this position where his handlers, you know, want him to say a certain thing, he can't control it. You know, his little notebook, too, if there is no collusion. It should be very, very clear to everyone where Trump stands, and that his loyalty is not with the United States, that his loyalty is to Russia, that we have a treasonous asset in the White House controlling the country. And, you know, I've been saying that for a couple of years. People in the intelligence community have been saying it, and it's, you know, Trump has been saying it and displaying this all very openly. And it's just taken an extremely long time for the public to grasp it, I think in part because there's been no repercussions. And in a normal functioning society, obviously, this would not have been allowed to go on. But it was. And so in that sense, I understand why people are having trouble coming to terms with it. But it's necessary that they do, because I think he was extremely clear yesterday. He enjoyed that press conference with Putin. He liked it. You know, he was winking. He was enjoying it. I don't think that he was submissive in the sense that he'd want to be there. I think he was waiting to publicly play this role. You know, Trump likes to be caught. He doesn't like to be punished and face any consequences, but he loves knowing you know, letting the world know that he's pulled one over on them. And this is just the ultimate crime.
Yeah, but what is he pulling over on us? I mean, the only thing I think of is making the world less safe. I mean, or is that hyperbolic?
No, that is part of it. You know, there's a sadistic component, but, you know, just look at who benefits. He's in a kleptocratic transnational alliance with a number of dictators. I think that Trump has always viewed the United States as something to strip apart, you know, not as a country, but as just kind of an entity. I don't think he's ever really had loyalty in a sort of even just like a baseline, you know, sense of citizenship or sentimentality. Like, he just doesn't have those kind of emotions. And, you know, the crowd that he's hung out with throughout his life has been the mafia. And, you know, and especially in the 90s, these kind of transnational alliances, these plutocrats and criminals from all over the world. And so, you know, if there are no laws or regulations or morality or sense of truth or rationality, then he can get away with whatever he wants. And what he wants is money and unfettered power and the ability to commit whatever crime he wants without consequences. And, you know, I think Putin and other leaders who he's aligned with want the same things. I think Putin is the one who is making it possible for Trump. And so, therefore, you know, Trump is going to stay his lackey.
There's nothing good in that. There's literally
nothing. There's nothing good in any of this.
You know, I'm just sitting here going, you know, I'm trying to find something positive because I don't want people to go in and run, you know, slit their wrists and, you know, hang out in the bathtub. But, you know, there's nothing good in this.
Oh, there's nothing good about any of these people. There are no redeeming qualities here. And there's no way that this will benefit the United States in any sense. I mean, the lines and rhetoric that Trump is spouting about peace, you know, you should look at those closely and then compare them with his interviews over the last 30 years, particularly when it comes to nuclear weapons, because Trump has been fantasizing about partnering with Russia for 30 years, you know, back when it was the Soviet Union, he said this. And his goal was to use nuclear weapons in tandem with Russia. So when people keep talking about, oh no, will the U.S. go to war with Russia? It's like, yeah, we will go to war with Russia as a partner against another country. I think at this point, it seems like the most likely country that we may go to war with is Iran, with the help of Netanyahu. And so I wasn't very surprised today when this morning it was announced that the U.S. had entered some sort of amorphous military alliance with Russia that was determined during this two-hour completely closed meeting between Trump and Putin. That's what I expected would happen because Trump's been talking about it for three decades.
So this is why, you know, you listen to our former allies, because you got to wonder, you know, Germany and the rest of them, if they're going to be looking at this and going, oh, where does that leave us?
Yeah, well, they should. I mean, I would hope after the NATO summit that they grasp what's going on. I mean, one thing that's always seems strange to me is that Trump has repeatedly announced his intentions, and other people in his administration have announced them, and they're awful. You know, they're awful for NATO. You know, they're about the dissolvement of NATO and the EU. They want to make the West unstable. They want to, quote, bomb the shit out of people. They want wars. They want to use nukes. They think that nukes are part of, you know, a merited part of preemptive strikes. Trump has changed the nuclear posture review so that a nuclear weapon can be deployed in response to a cyber attack. They're accusing all sorts of random people for the cyber attacks that Russia is doing. I think that point should be stressed because I think that what they're going to do is accuse whatever enemy they come up with, probably Iran, of hacks. And, you know, to be honest, Iran likely has hacked us. There were indictments for hacks. And use that as a pretext for war and for nuclear annihilation. And then add on to that all the, you know, the kleptocratic goals, the weird messianic religious component of this that you see expressed through people like Pence and through sort of corollaries in Israel that are associated with Netanyahu, Netanyahu's relationship with Kushner. I mean, I could go on. This is very, very, very bad. Like, you can't create like a supervillain movie that would outdo the situation that the world we're in right now. I mean, it's surreal to me. I wake up every day and I have this moment where I'm like, right, that happened, and this is what we're living in, and this is what I'm raising my family in, and it's just I don't know. People need to grasp that it's as bad as they think, and much likely worse. Probably worse even than what I'm saying now, because yeah. It's not like I know everything.
No. I mean, you know, I come back to, you know, somebody told me one time, imagine what we know. Think about everything that we know, and then imagine, you know how much more and how much worse it is of the things that we don't know.
Oh, absolutely. And those little details come out all the time. And, you know, and I do think that, at least in terms of crimes, particularly financial crimes, Mueller has accumulated a lot of that evidence. And I think, you know, it was obviously good that we had those indictments on Friday. I thought that the Maria Butina indictment was significant, not just for her, but for the details in it. So you're seeing an acceleration, finally, from Mueller and from people clamping down on Russian interference. But I think that that's kind of in response to what Trump is doing with Russia, that he's making this alliance very clear. You know, he seems to indicate he wants the United States to be a Russian proxy state, which is probably beyond Putin's fantasies of what he thought he could achieve. And I think they're alarmed, and they're finally, you know, kind of clamping down with the sort of pressure I thought should have been applied years ago. But I don't know if it's too late.
Yeah. But what do you think of the story that just came out today that that evidently Rosenstein, you know, came with those indictments on Friday and actually went to Trump and asked, do you want it before the summit or after? And Trump chose to have it, you know, right during the Queen's, right during his tea.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell. I think it's possible. It's possible Trump, you know, he is narcissistic. He might have just assumed that whatever he's doing, especially if it's something like meeting with the Queen, meeting with Putin, is going to take all the media hype away from whatever is in the indictments. I don't know whether he knew specifically what was in them, you know, that it implicated, you know, his campaign to such an extent. The details of that haven't been shared, but, you know, it is possible. I also think they're behaving with such a flagrance that I think they don't. I think until maybe yesterday, he thought he was untouchable, that no matter what information was revealed or what people did, they were going to get away with this. And I still think that he largely believes that, but I do think that the recent indictments, you know, both yesterday's and the one from Friday, have rattled them somewhat, and certainly rattled his handlers, if not him.
Yeah, well, I saw the statement of, you know, Russia's Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, who evidently is the congressman that's named in that affidavit, who claimed that the whole thing against this Maria Butina is just all bogus.
Is this Rohrabacher? Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
You cut out. Okay. Yeah, well, of course he's going to say it. I mean, he's the biggest lackey. You know, I remember him back from when I was a grad student, and I studied autocracies in the former Soviet Union, especially Uzbekistan. You know, he was at one of my lectures once in D.C. and got very pissy because I was criticizing the government of Uzbekistan, you know, just one of the most brutal dictatorships in the world. And, you know, that is where his alliances lie. They lie primarily with Russia, and then broadly with all the dictators that cooperate with Russia or come from the former Soviet sphere. He's also implicated in this particular scandal, you know, in the Trump Kremlin GOP, you know, conglomeration of treason, for lack of a better term, in a fairly serious way in terms of comments he's made, in terms of ties with the NRA, other groups. I mean, he's even, you know, tweeted stuff about it would be fine if we gave back Alaska to Russia. You know, this is like not a subtle guy. So I'm not super surprised that he said that.
Yeah, just don't give it back next week because we're going to be in Anchorage for a couple of days. So please don't give it back by then.
yeah.
Don't want to get hung up. But now is a great time to talk about your podcast, because I think right now is the perfect time. And I don't know if you planned it for this moment or if it was just luck, but this is like the perfect time for the release of your podcast to talk about what happened in 2016. And I listened to the first episode, you know, fantastic. I mean, there were things in there that, you know, look, I follow this and I think I follow it fairly closely. There were things in there that you're going, wow, that's bad.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, this is why Andrea and I, you know, have been yelling about this, you know, loudly every day, you know, for well over 2 years at this point. And it's frustrating. And, you know, of course, we didn't time it this way because we didn't know what was going to be coming out. I mean, we actually taped this in mid-June. You know, Andrea came down to St. Louis, and we taped them all at once, you know, the first three episodes. And the second one, I think, is even better. You know, we go all the way up to the election and the immediate aftermath, you know, before the inauguration, and rehash everything. And, you know, yeah, it was kind of remarkable to see a lot of stuff that we were talking about and speculating about really come back into the news cycle, you know, whether in terms of Brexit, whether in terms of, you know, the indictments of the Russians and of the Russian government, the NRA, you know, all these things. And, you know, and of course the Helsinki, you know, event, which really, I think, brought home to the fact that, you know, Trump is operating primarily on, you know, the interests of Russia and not in the United States, which is, you know, the fundamental aspect of this that people just would not admit. And now I think they kind of have to. So, of course, that prompts a reevaluation of 2016. And I'm glad that, you know, Andrea and I are here to provide that, because it's important that people get all these details.
No, I mean, I think the one important thing, and I keep hearing it from Trump supporters all the time, who say that the reason that they like him is he's an outsider, he's not a political person, you know, he's just an average, he's an average guy, he's a businessman. And you really go into the whole, you know, they created him. I mean, the Roy, you know, Roy Cohn was his mentor. I mean, you know, the whole, all the basis of, you know, building this mythical character almost. You know, there's a lot of back to this. And I think when people start, you know, putting these pieces together, that narrative of, you know, he's just an average guy, he's a neophyte, you know, he's not a politician, that's why we like, it goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he is part of this group that was Roy Cohn's proteges. And Roy Cohn, of course, you know, goes back to Nixon. And so Trump is very much part of the political establishment and always has been, just like Roger Stone and Paul Manafort and, you know, Lee Atwater and all these GOP guys who just had a different idea of politics. And it's not really surprising that they all went on to embrace Russia as a partner once Russia became a capitalist autocracy, because that's basically what they're seeking for the United States. And one with elements of, you know, white supremacy, of gun violence, of, you know, all these things that they've liked and that they also exploit for their own political gain. But, you know, Trump ran or almost ran for president 5 times. He's not new to this. He's been talking about it since the 80s. He actually went for it in 2000 and 2012. And, you know, the elements from his speech he made when he was sort of testing the waters for the first time all the way back in 1988 still show up in his politics now. He's been very, very consistent, especially since he took his trip to the Soviet Union in 1987. And this image of him as a businessman is one that's been constructed carefully, both by himself and his relationship with the tabloid media, where he built himself up, impersonated people. You know, he is good at spin and marketing, but I think The Apprentice is also very interesting, because even with that, you find a Russian connection. I mean, Mark Burnett's first idea for a reality TV show after Survivor was one about Putin, and he actually went into negotiations about with Putin to try to burnish his image. At the time that he was doing that, Trump's first campaign advisor for the 2016 campaign, or at least I think campaign advisor for New York, Michael Caputo, was also working as Trump's, as Putin's image consultant. You know, so you have both of this going on. Caputo is also, you know, one of the associates of Stone and Manafort. And then Burnett is who is responsible for kind of presenting this new image of Trump to the public, sort of this, you know, lovable curmudgeon who doesn't really mean it, who's this big tycoon who might be nice to you as long as you're nice to him. You know, all these things that Trump wants people to see him as were things that he created. And, you know, I do find it extremely strange that the person who brought that version of Trump to, you know, modern America was also somebody who wanted to do the same for Vladimir Putin, of all people, and eventually, you know, refused and didn't want, I think, to have that level of scrutiny. But it's extremely weird.
It is weird. It all comes back to the money. So last line of questioning I have for you, is there any hope? I mean, I got to have faith in something. Do you have hope in the Mueller investigation? Do you see this, you know, our institutions being able to weather this? You know, as you say, you know, this stuff is predictable. What are you predicting?
Well, I mean, I think Mueller knows what he's doing. I think his team knows what they're doing. I think they're focusing on the right things and they have the right priorities. But I'm not sure our institutions will withstand this. I mean, you see how the GOP is behaving, where they're complicit, they're unwilling to even acknowledge problems, much less prosecute them. I think we were in bad shape before Trump took office. I think our institutions were weak then. And so in a lot of ways, we're still dealing with all the problems we had before he came into power that have been compounded by him being in power. And, you know, the one thing I guess it gives me some, you know, solace is that I do think people understand the truth. I think people also, you know, are cherishing the rights that they have, the freedoms they have left, and they want to hold on to those. And, you know, there are a lot of positive things people can do, you know, every day to try to just, I don't know, live their values and do right by other people. And I don't know what will happen in the election. You know, I am very concerned that it will be, you know, deemed illegitimate or will be illegitimate, but people should absolutely go out and vote. I mean, you know, why the hell not? You know, give it a try.
Yeah, what do you got to lose?
Turn around and, yeah, exactly. I'm just going to steal that little line. And, you know, if people should vote. They should remain engaged. And they should fight, you know, because we have something worth fighting for. And if there's anything people have learned, it's that you can't take things for granted.
Yeah, there you go. Sarah, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to the next episode of the great podcast, Gaslit Nation. I hope everyone will take a listen. And I hope as a country, we all come around to the same reality and begin the fight to reclaim our country. Sarah, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
Good stuff. I appreciate it. Again, Gaslit Nation, find it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Shame on you.